I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello everyone, welcome to the What If podcast, brought to you by AI Channel. It's going to be a new podcast based on all things gaming, really. So today, to kick things off, we've obviously got Mark and Rory joining us today. So we'll go through some introductions and they can give you any Twitter name, etc. if you want to follow the guys. So first up, we'll bring in Mark and his introduction.
Hello, everybody. My name is Mark Webb. My gamer tag and PSN ID is Webby317, and you can also find me on Twitter at Webby317.
So, Mark, can you tell everyone a bit about your background, what you do currently and what you've done in the past, etc.?
Oh, well, where do I begin? Well, funnily enough, I ran my own podcast for the last 8 years. I literally just stopped doing it about 3 weeks ago. And literally when I stopped doing it, I got asked to come onto here, which does suit me fine, because the reason I stopped doing my previous show was because I was the host. I'd hosted it for so long. It was costing me money. And I just was running out of time to do stuff because I work full time. I'm studying full time as well. So I've got a pretty hectic schedule. So for me, guesting on a show is just far more easy, because you're just turning up and having a chat for an hour instead of having to do all that stuff of editing and all that sort of stuff as well. So this is great. This is great for me.
So basically what you're saying is I've let myself in for doom, considering
I run
a business, build apps and games, and now I'm trying to host a podcast. Well, that would be a couple
I think
of weeks.
A lot of people don't realize how much work goes into a podcast, because obviously you're editing it. And then you need to find a hosting package that costs you money, depending on how much storage you have, how much audio you need to store every month and so forth. But it's a lot of fun. I love it. I've met a lot of my best friends in the world through it. I've still run my community through Twitter and the Facebook page, which is great. But it's just the podcast for me, the hosting of it. Life changes. You know, things happen and you just... life goes on, as they say.
Absolutely. Well, hopefully this will be a new outlet for when you have the time and when you want to jump on.
Definitely. I mean, there's nothing better than talking about something you're really passionate about. And I'm so passionate about games. I game as much as I can. I just love it.
Brilliant. That's great. Okay, so joining us today is Rory. So, Rory, do you want to give us a bit of information about any gamer tags, Twitter handles, and then obviously your background?
I shall, mate. Yeah. My Twitter is PapaG84. I'm not massive on the online gaming since I had kids and settled down. I don't have quite as much time as I used to, and the hours I used to stay up till 4 a.m. playing Halo 3 or whatever I used to play on Xbox, not quite as much. But I've just been passionate about games since I was a kid, really. So I've probably owned a console probably every year since I was 4 or 5. So maybe a little bit older, but yeah, around those days. And yeah, like Webby said, it's just a passion for something that's great to talk about and connect with other people on. And I think much like you know, football, which this kind of podcast, well, channel's famous for, and other genres, doing film podcasts and various others. Gaming does bring a lot of people together, so it's just good to be involved.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think, I think it's one of the things which closely kind of matches the competitiveness of sport, really, especially if you, you know, when you start getting online or get your mates around to the house and start playing some you know, decent kind of, you know, one-on-one or team-based games. So hopefully we'll introduce a lot of people into our little gaming world, and also AI channels gaming world as we move forward. So so that's great. Okay, a bit of background about myself. Basically, I worked for Sony Computer Entertainment Europe for around 15 years. Worked across multiple different consoles: PS2, PS3, PS4, Vita. And most of that time was spent on the Formula One series based in Liverpool, the Killzone series, Killzone 2 based in Amsterdam, and then back to Liverpool working on Wipeout HD, Wipeout Fury, so on and so forth. So I've always been absolutely passionate, like you guys, about games. I basically left kind of an early computer-aided design job to join Psygnosis in 96. I had the opportunity and went into Psygnosis as part of like PC tech test and QA. So, similar to Gags's background in the test form.
That's a blast from the past, man. Psygnosis. Yeah, that was a big part of my childhood on the PS1.
Yeah, it's a massive blast. And it was, as I say, I managed to kind of capture the real kind of essence of Psygnosis. They've just recently been purchased by Sony, but they've not quite moved into full-blown Sony-only games. So we were still doing PC stuff. But if you want to start talking a bit retro, I mean, we're going back to kind of Shadow of the Beast, Discworld, you know, Crazy Ivan, you know, some real kind of mental games that Psygnosis were churning out.
Did Psygnosis used to produce for Amiga? Because I swear, back in the day, Psygnosis did games.
Yeah,
Commodore 64 and Amiga in that era. Well, Shadow of the Beast was that era. So
yeah, I'm pretty sure Shadow of the Beast would have been on the Amiga.
I think it was. I think I owned it. Yeah.
Yeah, we're obviously trying to delve into the grey matter years back now. My brain, but it was a great company to work for, and kind of, you know, managed to keep the essence as we went forward with Sony, and then started working on, you know, cutting edge consoles and things like that, which was awesome. But I suppose we could dip in and out of some of the games that I've been involved in, and some of the things that we've been doing on Sony throughout the show. But great experience, and I think now, obviously skipping over all my kind of, you know, credentials, but basically my PSN Xbox Live tag is Hard Times UK, and my Twitter handle is CJ Grinnell. So CJ GRANNELL, because I've got a strange surname that's difficult to spell for people. And currently got my own business. We do apps, we do, you know, indie games, and kind of gone in a bit of a different spin. And obviously we've been working closely with Gags to make the AI channel app, and, you know, adding more features to it as we go along. So I'm sure Gags will announce them as we move forward in the coming weeks. Okay, so we'll move over now onto our next topic. And I think we'll start with you, Mark. So what game first got you into gaming that you can remember? So it's not necessarily the first game you played, because we probably all played Pong or something like that.
I remember playing games like Mario on the SNES and Sonic on the Mega Drive. A lot of people have fond memories of those. But the game that really got me into gaming, and I'm really sorry for any of my previous listeners who are going to be listening to this, because I used to talk about it a lot, because I know a lot of them are going to be listening to this, Final Fantasy VII. The greatest game of all time, in my opinion.
I could agree with that.
It was Christmas Day for me. Oh, I must have been about 14. And I really wanted a PlayStation 1. And I got it on Christmas Day. And my mum bought me Final Fantasy VII with it. And I was like, what is this game? It looks shit, I thought, you know. So I spent about a week just playing that PS1 demo disc that came with the console before I even put Final Fantasy in. I thought, you know what? This is the only game I've got on the PlayStation at the moment. I might as well give it a go. And I tell you what, I got lost into that world for months, because it was before the internet really took off. So you couldn't really go online. You couldn't go online and get game guides or anything like that. So it took me months and months. It took me about 6 months to actually complete that game. And I've actually subsequently, I own it on the PSP, the Vita. I'm waiting for it to come out on the PS4. I've got it on the PC. I must have played this game about 10 times now. It is the greatest game ever for me. And I'm quite lucky. My missus really loves the Final Fantasy series, and subsequently I've bought every Final Fantasy game since 7. Some of them haven't been so good, but for me, Final Fantasy 7 just holds a special place in my heart, and if it wasn't for that game, I can guarantee you now I wouldn't be a hardcore gamer now, because that's really the game that sucked me into that world.
So you are the ultimate Final Fantasy fanboy then?
Yeah, I've got posters, I've got figurines, I've got all the collector edition games. My wedding I'm getting married next year, and it's Final Fantasy themed with a hint of Disney.
Fantastic.
So Kingdom Hearts has been involved in that as well, obviously. I'm a big nerd, and my missus is a nerd, and it's great. I mean, as a prime example, in my front room, we've got two TVs. PS4 and a PS3. Well, I'm looking to get another PS4, and we both sit there and play Final Fantasy 14 together. It's great.
Fantastic.
I love it.
It's the perfect couple. You've found each other.
Definitely. And we actually met on Xbox Live as well. So there we go.
You can't say any more than that. I've got quite a few friends actually who've met through, you know, relationships through gaming and things like that. So it brings a lot of people together, which is not a bad thing.
Most definitely. And the thing that I found with, it was Xbox Live that really, for me, grew a big community, was through the podcast that I used to run and just meeting all those people. I mean, I've met people who I used to podcast with or game with online on Xbox in real life. We used to meet up at Eurogamer every year. I know Eurogamer's on at the moment, but I'm not going this year. But I've even gone out to America and met my friends on Xbox Live and stuff, and had meetups out there. It's been an amazing experience. It really, really has.
Yeah, I think it definitely, for me, obviously, we're going on a slight tangent here, but what the hell, it's episode one. No, I think you're right. You know, for me, the biggest thing about kind of Xbox Live and 360 and things like that, for me and my mates, were, you know, that kind of, you know, team-based, you know, gameplay. You know, we used to spend hours playing kind of Rainbow Six and Ghost Recon and things like that, you know, in a kind of team-based fashion against teams from America, you know, Europe, all over the place. And it's a weird one. We've not managed to kind of capture that kind of real game, in essence, you know, from the start. I mean, we were talking about, you know, kind of regular people meeting up at kind of, you know, 7-8 o'clock at night and playing the thing for 3 or 4 hours, as if it was, you know, if we were flying abroad and you know, taking part in some real kind of battle or something. It was amazing.
It was amazing, because when Xbox Live first came out on the original Xbox, you know, the community then was so small, you would be going into random games and you'd be meeting the same people over and over again. You know, that would never happen on Xbox Live or PlayStation Network now, because there's just millions and millions of people playing it. So back then it was a really nice community. And for me now, especially with the launch of these current gen consoles, the Xbox One and the PS4, that for me, I feel that essence has been lost. I actually find myself now playing online a lot less than what I used to.
Yeah.
And I can't explain that. I don't know if I have less gaming time in general. I can't go on as late at night. But I've got like 400 friends on each console who I could game with. But everyone's playing single player games at the moment. It's really strange. Seems to have done a bit of a reversal. But
yeah, I think both platforms as well. I don't think the kind of community tools are as strong as they were when the first kind of Xbox came out, and Xbox 360. Yeah. I think Microsoft really kind of nailed it, you know, with just, you know, cross game chat, party chat, you know, all those things. And I think so they've not really kind of captured those on either console really. But we'll but now the kind of friends and community and stuff is a really good point. So we'll come back to that a little bit later on and touch on that. Rory, over to you. Obviously sitting there quietly.
I'd like to reiterate that though, because I do think they did nail it. I loved playing my Xbox 360 online. I absolutely adored it. And like you said, you would speak to people, and you know, it was a bit more of an open environment. You know, people were willing to, you know, I don't know, it's kind of changed a little in terms of the genre, but I would always get together online with my mates and play. It was probably Halo 3 for a period of time and a little bit of Call of Duty, but pretty much anything and everything that had a good multiplayer platform, you'd go out of your way to buy a game because your mates had it. So you could go online and play. And it was a community. I do think that's, with the next gen consoles, a little bit lost than what
it was. Well, I think one of the reasons it's lost, though, is because you used to go online and you'd meet new people and chat and stuff. But now, because you've got big friends lists now built up, you're always in party chat, so you're not meeting those new people. So the only way, like, I find myself meeting new people is through social media like Twitter and Facebook or various gaming communities to set up gaming nights and stuff.
I think the social networks have kind of played a big part in it. Twitter, Facebook, things like that, because it was certainly kind of less, you know, stress or dominance from those. Whereas, as you say, you know, it was kind of like jumping on a games console with your kind of friends in the living room with you. You know, just a headset on, having a chat with people, whether they're in America or other parts of the country. And I think that was just perfect, and then the perfect set of, you know, multiplayer games or team based games, as you were saying. You know, Halos, your Graws, your Rainbow Sixes, your Crackdowns, you know, all these type of really cool, you know, sandbox or, you know, team-based experiences.
I'm still waiting for a good team-based game to come out on these consoles, you know. I need a new Ghost Recon I've been playing the beta for Rainbow Six and it doesn't have that magic for me as the old games did, but I'm holding high hopes for the new Ghost Recon, I really am, because like, for me, the Halos and the Call of Duties, I can't get into them anymore. They're just too quick for me. Perhaps I'm getting old. I don't know.
The reflexes. Are you still, Rory? Are you still into your kind of Halos or your, you know, fast paced?
Not as much. I go along the same lines. I've moved into kind of single campaigns a little bit more, like you said. I've kind of moved away from, you know, it's the times of day you play and the commitments and stuff. Because if you're working, you know, quite a lot of hours and the commitment goes into it, you don't always, you know, when you get home, if you've been on the phone all day or at work, you maybe just want a bit of time to get into a game yourself without the rest of it, the community aspect of that. I think that's what changes when you know, change age a little bit. You've got a lot less free time, so you just kind of fitting in games as you can. Whereas when you were younger, you had so much free time just to play whenever you want. So it does change as you get older a little bit.
Sorry, mate.
No, go for it. It's fine.
No, I was going to say, I think you're absolutely right. I think it's a case of, you know, kind of when you're in school and you're coming out of school or your first job and things like that, I used to always remember planning in kind of the gaming session was part of the day. Always. So it was kind of like finish school or finish work. It was kind of, you know, have a bite to eat and then you've got an evening of playing games and jumping online with your friends and things like that. So it was always kind of planned in, but obviously now, you know, we're all kind of working hard and studying and kind of you try to, you know, you're living a life and you're spending it with a partner or friends or whatever it is. And the one thing I find is that I'll go out and I'll buy a game, and certainly recently because we've been really busy, but I'll buy a game that I've been looking forward to playing and I'll install a thing and it'll kind of be late on at night and I think I'll pick that up tomorrow. And then something happens tomorrow and it's kind of like, oh, when I get home, I'll play that. And I just get caught in this kind of, it's just, out of reach. I just quite haven't got the time.
When you're younger, that never would have been the case. You go and pick up a game and you'd literally make your day available to play it for hours and hours and hours. And I used to do that. Every new Final Fantasy game was the same for me. I would literally clear a week just to play it as much as possible. And that's the way it is, really. But if we're going to go back to the game that probably got me hooked, although I'd played games for a while, the main one, if we're talking about playing with friends and everything else, was GoldenEye on the N64.
Oh, wicked.
Amazing game, yeah.
it was at the time, it was the first game that really, I don't know, connected people in terms of a multiplayer format. And if you were good at it, and you could strafe, which made you about twice as fast as everyone else, you just literally rinse your mates, and you know, everyone would come round and you'd always have, you know, your four controllers, and all your mates would bring their individual controllers, which I used to love. So,
and that would cause those arguments, wouldn't it? Stop looking at my screen, or you know where all the spawn points are. So like, you wait there and then shoot your mates since they spawned. It was brilliant.
Yeah, when you had the golden gun and you just stand behind the spawn point and just literally just clock up the kills. It was such a good game. I mean, the solo campaign was pretty incredible, and it was probably the first game I played to the point of doing all that. You released all the cheats if you did the games in the levels in, you know, certain time limits and things like that. So you had like a massive cheat menu. And I literally played it to the point of unlocking absolutely every aspect of the game. I love that game. I played it. I've probably played that game, even though, you know, I've got my N64 to dust off somewhere, but I probably played that game more than anything else just from those years when I was, you know, just playing it constantly. It was such a good experience.
Yeah, it's a fantastic game, and it's a game that, you know, me and some friends were playing a few weeks back, having like a bit of a retro sesh, you know, old Mario Kart and things like that. And it's kind of it's a weird one as well, because certainly like four player split screen and things like that, it's just so kind of James Bond and British. Because I remember like, you know, people actually, even though we were all on the same telly, kind of respected each other's kind of quadrants of the screen and tried not to like look and cheat. And then, as you were saying, Joe, eventually, if you start just getting, you know, killed left, right, and center, you start just like watching everyone else's screen and trying to find where they are. But there was always
a mate's house. You basically, if you had the biggest telly, you were hosting the games on GoldenEye. Do you know what I mean? Everyone was around your house. If you had the tiny telly in your bedroom and you couldn't steal the living room telly, there was no way you were going to that person's house, because you cannot split a screen four ways when it's like 14 inches or whatever. So
like four DSs miles away from the couch trying to play. Awesome stuff. Okay, well, I mean, that kind of leads us on to the next thing, which is probably, oh no, actually I haven't said what got me into games.
No, what's yours?
Jumping ahead of myself. Mine's probably, I'm going way back, and the thing that got me into gaming, really, I kind of always loved playing around with computers and stuff like that. So, you know, as I say, it's quite easy for, you know, we've all played Pong and we've all played, you know, these kind of really early games. But the thing that got me into gaming big time, and it's a bit weird because I don't actually play football games as much as I used to in the past. But it was Kickoff 2 with me and my brother. We basically had an Amiga. We kind of had the Amiga in one of our bedrooms, and we just used to sit there with kind of two zip sticks, playing kind of football matches over and over again, and designing kits, and it was weird. I think it was that experience with my brother and us kind of, you know, discovering games at like an early age together, and, you know, the competition and everything that brought us together. I think that's what got me into gaming. That was kind of like, you know, this is amazing. This is kind of like, you know, something that we weren't kind of used to. Obviously, we were getting kind of more colours. We were getting, you know, better gameplay and things like that. And I just found it to be, you know, a fantastic gaming experience, which got us into gaming. And I think that kind of, because I was quite, you know, quite close with my brother, we kind of continued our gaming journey together, you know, and we got kind of, you know, Mega Drives and you know, the NES and SNES and things like that. and started to play all these kind of, you know, team-based games or multiplayer games and things like that. And I think that really got me into, you know, gaming. And I thought, you know what, I'm a gamer and I'm going to carry on playing games as you know, as I get older. So it's going kind of, you know, way back, you know, not as far as Pong or anything like that, but so. You know,
I remember it. It was the linear one where you couldn't really run diagonally with the ball, otherwise you'd lose touch with it.
Yeah,
you?
The ball was just kind of loose. It wasn't any of these kind of early football.
You had to run in a direct line with the ball, and if you veered at any angle, you'd lose it.
It was probably a much more skillful football game. And
I played sensible soccer a little bit more back in the day on my Amiga, so that had a little bit more control about it. I remember that game quite vividly. Yeah, I loved my Amiga as well. I absolutely adored it. It was you just have so many games. You just copy hundreds and hundreds of games.
It just unfortunately became the most like pirated platform.
It did, ever, yeah.
Which eventually killed it, but I'm kind of gutted because I sold my Amiga to a mate kind of years ago, and then it came to light that it kind of went into a loft, and then it was left in a house, and I was just thinking, oh my god, why did I just keep hold of that? I had all kinds of classics and things like that, so yeah, a bit gutted about that, but yeah, that's probably the thing I identify, you know, as the thing that got me into gaming. It's not necessarily my favorite game of all time, but. I'd hope
that wouldn't be your favourite game of all time.
No, that'd be shocking, really. So, but actually, it leads us on to our next topic anyway, which is actually our favourite retro game of all time. So I'll probably take this first and then hand over to you guys. So I think we spoke a bit about this on Twitter between us in a group anyway. So,
yeah.
But there's probably a couple. If we say our like favorite two or three, maybe, or it depends on how many you've got. But probably for me is, as I say, going way back to kind of Mega Drive days and stuff like that. Now, so a game called General Chaos, which was kind of, you know, two sets of strange kind of terrorist factions, which were basically just all the same people, but in two different colors, one blue and one red. I think so. I think every single member they were just twins that wore in different colored clothing or whatever. But it was, remember rightly, Electronic Arts, I think it was. And it was just an awesome game. It was kind of one of the first, you know, static screen, you know, one player starts on the left, the other player starts on the right, or top down, whichever way it was, top to bottom. And it was just ace. You had to kind of traverse barbed wire and weird things like that, and then try and use each soldier's power to override each other. You had kind of machine gun guy, you had, you know, a bit of a rocket, probably a bit of kind of early doors of like Team Fortress or something, but without you know, with tiny little landscape. So
I looked this up when you mentioned it, because I couldn't place it for love nor money, but once I saw the images on Google, I kind of knew exactly what it was. There was a period of loads of games of that style, but that was quite unique at the time, you know.
It was mental. And I think what we'll try and do as well is we'll try and tweet some screenshots of these games that we talk about, in case people are listening to this and just going, oh, what the hell was that? Or
yeah, if nobody knows Final Fantasy VII, that needs to be yeah, adjusted. Yeah.
Trying to place things and stuff. Other retro games, probably. I've started off on a bit of a football theme here, and I clearly didn't want to, but probably the first FIFA. You know, can you remember like the isometric? It was like an ice.
You're talking about the Mega Drive ones, and they had the indoor football as well.
Yeah.
I remember the indoor.
That was
one.
So
yeah.
Fun.
Which was just like, it was kind of revolutionary. I think it had gone from like sensible soccer and kickoff to this kind of, oh, what we'll do is we'll do this like pseudo 3D, and you can see the whole pitch and the goal and stuff like that. And it was mental. If you look at it now and watch videos, it runs at about 10 frames a second. It's really bizarre. But it obviously felt really fast-paced, and you could obviously stand in front of the goalkeeper with your striker. So when he kicked it off, it just bounced off his chest into the goal. So I think he had not gone into that one. But there are kind of a few little retro ones. I could, to be honest, I could talk about all kinds. I could talk about like Zool and Monkey Island and all these other Police Quest and all kinds of games are kind of my favourite. You know, going back in time a bit, but they're just a couple that I've picked out for the purpose of this episode. But Rory, what's kind of your favourite retro games of all time?
The ultimate retro game for me, Streets of Rage 2. I played that game, I don't know how many times. I don't know how many thousands of times I played Streets of Rage 2. And it's of that era, those games aren't particularly long. You know, I remember playing Golden Axe again recently, and it completes in about 25 minutes. But Streets of Rage was about 2 hours long, and the soundtrack was just absolutely immense. I just remember at the time the visuals just being, you know, just incredible. And it's the kind of 2D scrolling, you know, beat 'em up if you've not played it really. But
They were like awesome like art style and sprites and things like that. I think I've missed the trick here. As soon as you start talking about Streets of Rage, I'm like, why haven't I said Shinobi? Why haven't I said Golden Axe? Why haven't I said these? But it's the way it is when you start to talk about games, isn't it? It kicked off like a series of similar games, wasn't it? We've kind of was it like
it did? I did, and I just don't think they ever really. I don't think they ever really replicated it. And Streets of Rage 1 wasn't particularly good, and 3 was pretty terrible, but 2 was just nailed it. It really did. And as I said, the soundtrack, and it had boss battles, which, you know, I love a game with a good boss battle in it. And you know, all the characters. There was only 4 characters, but they all had different attributes, and yeah, I just absolutely adored it. That was Mega Drive wise, and like you said, there's loads of Mega Drive games you can pick that were popular retro wise. But I don't know if we're going N64 period. You know, the Mario Kart games are always up there. But
yes,
just always. I love Mario Kart 64. I love Mario Kart 64.
Yeah, it was amazing, and Pilot Wings and all these kind of. We can probably dedicate like a whole 5-hour podcast to a retro gaming, couldn't we?
Maybe you talked earlier about who you'd worked with. I think Rareware produced that period of games. You know, Banjo Kazooie and Goldeneye and Perfect Dark and other periods in that kind of N64 genre, and they just really got it right. I mean, I'm not sure if they're producing quite the way they were then they moved to Sony and various things, but yeah, that was a good period of gaming for me when I was younger.
Yeah, I think they were just kind of free to just create, weren't they? And everything that they put out was gold at the time.
Everything they're putting out now is just shit.
it's such a shame, you know. Yeah. It's such a shame.
Because Microsoft has just completely destroyed their soul.
Yeah, I was going to say, is that the constraints of Microsoft have kind of turned them into this, like, new tech? Whenever a bit of tech comes out, they obviously use the Rare team to try and do
something. Yeah, they just got relegated to making avatars and avatar clothing.
I thought it was, yeah.
Yeah, it's such a shame, isn't it? Such a waste of talent. So over to you, Webby. I mean, I think as we move through the podcast, is your answer to every question going to be Final Fantasy?
Well, I'm just going to say, I'm just going to get out of there. Final Fantasy 6, 7, 8, and 9.
Awesome. We thought that would be the theme of things.
And 10 and 10 too. But 12. but seriously, yeah, that Chrono Trigger, brilliant. But going back even further for me, Double Dragon.
Oh, brilliant.
But mainly for me, playing, because when I was a young lad, I didn't, you know, I used to go around my friend's houses and game a lot. So I used to go around my friend's house and he had a Super Nintendo, and we'd sit there for hours just playing Super Mario All-Stars, just taking turns, like being Mario and Luigi, which was great. And Mortal Kombat, the first Mortal Kombat on the Mega Drive, I used to spend hours on that as well. That's kind of my retro games, and it's not as kind of retro as you would expect, but that's what I had
No, I think at the nowadays time, you're going back, you know, you're going back a long way to early PS1 games and stuff anyway. Yeah. So they'd class as retro to most people, wouldn't they? So
Yeah,
I think as we started playing 360 and PS2 and all these consoles, we were kind of, they were retro, but yeah, I think as you say, five, six, seven, eight years ago.
Can I say the first Metal Gear Solid then? Because that's still the best series.
It was a proper awesome game. Did you guys used to spend, what did you used to spend your 10p's on in the arcade before we had the joys arcade of home console?
Didn't have any arcades near me.
I don't, well,
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
I was born in the middle of Liverpool, pretty much, so we didn't have any arcades. I just had a corner shop, which he was a pure legend of the time, because he'd just buy in three of the latest arcade machines every few months. So I think like Streets of Rage and Shinobi and things like that were in there, and it was just, I think it's one of the things that people don't really capture the essence of. I think, as you were saying, Rory, you know, the games used to be 20 minutes or 25 minutes, but the difficulty used to ramp up so much and at such the right pace, where it was just, you know, 10p after 10p after 10p. They just nailed that kind of, you would die or you would fail at the right point, you know, where you would continue. And I think
I remember Shinobi at the arcade a couple of times, but yeah, it, arcades, they've kind of died a death, really, haven't they? There's just not much. Yeah, everyone's got a console, now, so I presume they're all pretty rubbish now, which is a shame.
Yeah, I mean, cause... I just as an example, I went to London on the weekend.
Yeah.
And I went into Namco World or whatever it's called.
I remember that, yeah.
Fucking shit. I was like, what the hell? I was expecting to at least see a Pac-Man machine, for God's sake. No. It was all, you know, all these machines that dish out tickets. So that's what it was. I was so disappointed. But I know there is a couple of specific retro arcades in London, but they're not in central London. They're kind of on the outskirts, and they're like... double up as pubs and restaurants and stuff. So I'm actually going to probably visit one in a month or so. But that's kind of the only place you're going to get retro machines now. Because all the new
machines... I don't think the UK's for it, is it? I think in the States they've still got it, but I think it's...
Yeah.
And Japan, obviously, but it's kind of not really here anymore.
I think you're spot on. I think everything's these ticket machines now, and so kids are just going mental at the parents to win about 7 million tickets, and it gets them like a key ring. They've spent about £4,000. You know, could have bought the machine themselves by the time they finished with it. But I think I went to kind of a mini Namco World, which is in Trafford Centre in Manchester. I think it's still Namco, but And that's the same loads of ticket machines. But the games which were quite interesting to me was these kind of two-player, you know, Operation Wolf-style, you know, gun games. And they've kind of created these weird, what they try and call 4D, because it blows some air at you and does various things. But they've kind of gone down a trippy route of, like, zombie horror shoot-em-up games and kind of scares and 3Ds and things jumping out at you and stuff like that, which was, it was a good laugh after a couple of beers, as you can imagine. But then there was like this, a new take on like this afterburner machine. I think if you look on the internet, they brought out like a new Star Wars arcade game where it kind of puts you in like the bubble. I was just the only thing that ever made me motion sick in my life. I sat in it for like 30 seconds, flew around the city chasing a few planes, and I had to jump out of the thing before I was going to vom everywhere. So I think that the thought of being, you know, Maverick or Iceman from Top Gun was there when it stepped in and put me pounding, but I had to retreat after around 10 seconds. It was an awful experience. So I think gone are the days of kind of retro arcade games and things. So I might have to find these places in London and check them out and relive my childhood. Cool. So we'll move on to retro. What better way to say what our favourite modern game of all time? We'll jump back to you, Webby. I mean, you're going to say Final Fantasy.
at some point. Are we up to 14? 13?
Quite a tough one, to be honest.
I think it doesn't necessarily need to be your favourite, but maybe...
Okay, so the top three games... Let's say the top three games of this generation for me. I would say at the moment, well, I'm going to go 360 as well. Dark Souls.
Okay. Love the game.
Absolutely amazing. Took me about 6 months to actually finish it, but that's what I liked about it. It was just really hard, quite repetitive at times, but it's very rare you get a game where you get that satisfaction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because so many games just hold your hand throughout the whole experience, Call of Duty. So with this, it was like, it reminded me of an old retro game, but with a new shiny polish. Yeah. And that's what I loved about it.
I suppose that's probably the closest thing to an old classic arcade game that we were talking about, because you've got that continue. And you find it out on the fly what went wrong. And as you say, there's nothing holding your hand. There's nothing to say, this is how you do it. It's just kind of like try again. And then you get that amazing.
The other thing I loved about it was it got people talking. And what I mean is, because there wasn't really a lot of walkthroughs and stuff. So what it would be on Twitter and Facebook or in party chat, it was, oh man, I'm stuck on this section. How did you do it? And then your mates, you'd all be talking with each other, giving each other strategies and all that sort of stuff. And you could call your friend in to help you fight a boss and stuff. And it was just a really great, great experience for me. It really, really was. So that's number one.
Yeah.
Oh man, it's so hard. Recently, Witcher 3.
Yeah, amazing game.
It took me about 90 hours, finished it. Wow. Not giving away any spoilers, but I loved it. Yeah. And a game I'm still playing at the moment, I've been playing it for the last 2 years, and I still play it every week. I'm sorry, guys, but it's Final Fantasy 14. because I used to play WoW back in the day when it was cool to play WoW. So it was like the first year when it came out. Got bored of it. I've played Final Fantasy 11. That was an MMO. Not really. It was all right. But Final Fantasy 14 is the first actual MMO which I've actually enjoyed for a prolonged period of time, purely for a story perspective, because, man, that story just goes on forever. But it's just really engrossing, and it just keeps you wanting to play more and more. And it's not grindy like an MMO, where, you know, like an MMO is just like, oh, I've got to kill a sheep for about 5 hours just to level up or whatever. With this, it's, you know, you're either doing a main story or you're doing side quests, which are all well, not all of them, but most of them are have got a backstory to them. Or there's a reason for doing them. It's not just a simple fetch quest. Oh, can you deliver this log to this guy on the other side of the world or whatever? It's actually got proper story, and that's what keeps me playing it.
Well, I kind of find that exactly what you're saying with, and I'll probably get loads of people hating me and all kinds, but I found that with Destiny. I thought, when I first started playing Destiny, I really started getting into it, and you were kind of exploring these areas and bits of story and mission. And then as soon as you kind of finish that, and it's kind of, do you know what? It's time to grind. And it's
we need to have a conversation
about the same, do the same, do the same, do the same. And it's just like, oh my God.
I completely agree. And I think that Activision and Bungie are completely ripping off gamers everywhere. And I don't know how people get sucked into this mindset. I mean, I was really excited for Destiny and I played it. And I completed the main story of the game before the Taken King came out.
Yeah.
So, what the fuck's just happened? And then it was literally going back to the same areas over and over again, doing the same thing. And I said, guys, I'm not having fun. This is boring. How in the hell have they spent millions and millions of pounds just on these same few areas you're going back to over and over again? So the Taken King came out last week.
Yeah.
I game share on my Xbox with one of my friends, and he loves Destiny, so I got the Taken King through him. So I thought, you know what, I'll give it a go. All the reviewers are saying, you know, it's packed full of content, blah, blah, blah. I'll give it a second chance. Me and my mate went through the Taken King story in under 2 hours. Finished it. What else is there to do? A couple of strikes, there's a raid, but then you're just going through the same areas over and over again, just rinse and repeat, just waiting to get a better gun. To me, that's not fun. I need a hook, you know, like a story hook. I mean, I love my story-based games, you can tell from Final Fantasy stuff. I need that story hook to keep me going. I want to see what's going to happen next. And I'm sorry, that just doesn't have it. It's just, I feel it's just taking the piss out of people. I really do.
I agree. It massively disappointed me. I put a good... whatever it was, I put a good kind of like 45-50 hours into it, and then just kind of found myself into doing exactly the same position as you, where it's just kind of, you know what, I'm kind of bored of this now, and I'm going into strikes and raids and things with people who are massively, you know, leveled up over me, and it just got completely unbalanced. And I agree, I don't understand why they've just made one game and just getting everyone to replay over and over again. It's not even like a good grind and like some of the older MMOs and RPGs and stuff like that. But it's maybe that's for another topic, to a whole podcast on the hate of Destiny, and certainly with us at the minute. But
and how crazy people are. I've got people on my friends list who just play it all day every day, and I don't
understand that. I don't like it at all. I picked it up and I was like, you know, they've got a... You would expect it to be much more polished. It looks good, but it's got no depth. It's got no enjoyment value, like you said. It's just literally... It's soulless. It's such a soulless game.
I mean, don't get
game.
Me wrong. I enjoyed... when I was playing The Taken King, going through these new areas, I was still like...
Yeah.
I was saying to my mates, I was saying, wow, you know, this is actually quite a cool story. The cutscenes are wicked. We're going through these areas. Wow, the graphics are amazing. You know, whenever you're playing multiplayer co-op with your friends, you're automatically going to have a better time anyway because you're together.
Yeah.
But then as soon as those credits kicked in, my mate was like, wow, we finished it. And I said, is that it? Are you actually kidding me? You know, if I'd actually paid £40 for that content, I'd have been so pissed off. I mean, I was pissed off I didn't even pay for it, for God's sake. So, you know.
That is the way the industry has gone a little bit, isn't it? It's the add-ons to the game that, you know, I think when you pay 40, 50 quid for a game, you expect it to be a complete game. I think it's quite disappointing that about the progressive add-ons.
I don't mind paying 40, 50 quid for a game that's 8 hours long because of I don't have the time commitment, really. I quite like that eight-hour chunk or whatever. Yeah. So that's not bothering, but 2 hours, you know, that's an Xbox Live Arcade game for like 15 quid.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely agree with it. And I think, Yeah, I think we could have a whole episode.
I think you should, man.
You know, what kind of irks us in the gaming world at the moment? So, have you got any others, Webby, in there or?
I'll let you move on.
Okay, Rory, what are yours?
I'll mention The Last of Us. I know it's quite cliched because everyone adores it, but it is one of the best
story-based
games, you know, I've played in quite a long time, and I played it late. I had an Xbox 360 and I didn't have a PS3, so I played it on the PS4. I've only played it, you know, last 6 months or so. So, you know, I'm still quite fresh to it, whereas everyone played it years ago. And yeah, it is an excellent experience. And, you know, it does kind of branch the whole film stroke game section. And I know there's not as much gameplay in it as there would be in maybe other titles, but it's a good modern game and it gets the balance pretty damn right on the most part. It's a good game.
I agree. I think the kind of opening chapter or the opening 15-20 minutes is, like, you know, one of the greatest opening sections of a game ever, where, you know, no spoilers in case people have not played it yet, but just an incredible start, you know, visually and the kind of impact of what goes on. So I think you've picked a spot on one there, and we should probably say, if no one's kind of picked it up or played it yet, then make it your priority.
Well, they're bringing out that collection for the PS4 soon,
yeah,
aren't they?
There you go. So
that's perfect. Really cool. I just want to mention one game I completely forgot, if that's okay. Battlefield 4.
Okay.
I just want to say, it came out obviously on the 360 first and the PS3, but who plays online on that? Xbox 360, let's not forget our PC.
Of course.
But for me, Battlefield 4 is probably one of the greatest modern games for me, because it's one of the best community games I've had with my friends, all getting online. I must have put about 150 hours into that game online with my friends, just playing it online. So much fun.
Yeah, I think that's what it is.
You know, it's the fun in games that sometimes is a little bit lost, really. But the other couple I really liked, and it's going to why, but I really like Mirror's Edge a few years ago. It's probably quite a lot of years ago now. And I'm quite looking forward to the one that's coming out next year if they get it right, which it's been in production for quite a long time. So I'm hoping they will nail it, really. I like that kind of genre of games, and I like the last Tomb Raider game as well, which is on the was it on the 360 and the PS3, and they revamped it, didn't they, when they brought out the Xbox One and the PS4.
It's actually free to download on Xbox Live right now as well with Games of
Gold. Yeah, it's because they're pushing the new one, aren't they? Which probably you guys can talk about more than I can, but it's quite interesting having a console only, but for a period of time game, you know, it's weird, isn't it? I've not heard of that before. I know
it's a timed exclusive. Yeah. I know that happens actually quite a lot in the games industry.
Yeah. It's a weird one, isn't it? I mean, it looks incredible. And I think, I think Microsoft have played a bit of a trump card with it, but it was kind of weird where people thought it was, you know, it was kind of an Xbox brand, and then it was the acquisition of the studio, and then it was kind of like, well, no, it's, you know, we've just taken it on for a bit. But
it'll sell some consoles, I'd imagine. If they get it right, it'll probably sell some consoles.
Well, I think for Microsoft, it's probably they're hoping it, you know, to be the kind of like Uncharted, aren't they, for a bit?
Yeah.
So that's
Uncharted got pushed back again, didn't it? So it's February or March or something next year. Yeah. So I think, that's what PS, they're probably hoping they'll sell some Microsoft will sell some consoles this Christmas, because they've got quite a few big games coming out, haven't they, in the next?
Yeah, absolutely. Any more in your
I liked Far Cry 4 as well, to be fair. Yeah. I quite enjoyed, again, It's a lot based on the scenery and the story and the gameplay, but I did enjoy it. It's a pretty epic game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they've really kind of nailed those series. But it's a great. But there's obviously a bit of a trend going on, isn't it? Because we're all kind of really into our, you know, story driven games, yeah, experiences and stuff, which is not a bad thing. But
and I forgot to mention, I'm a massive Forza fan as well.
Okay, awesome.
So I played a lot of Forza Horizon 2 and recently Forza 6. Amazing.
Well, is that all yours, Rory, or have you got
that's co- yeah, that's good me, man. Yeah, what about yourself?
Okay, well, obviously just chip in while I'm talking if anything comes to mind, but there's a few for me which are kind of really amazing experiences I had. So one, which is maybe a bit of a shocker to people or may not be, but was the first Crackdown. Just an absolutely incredible game for me, just sandbox joy. It wasn't, you know, it didn't particularly have, you know, the greatest kind of background or story to it. It was just kind of, you know, take over areas of the city and things like that. But I just think the orb collection side of it, you know, and just kind of
so addictive, these
kind of hidden orbs. Me and my mate would literally just jump on co-op and we just literally try and find these orbs, and you know, one of us would probably be slightly more, you know, powered up than the other. So, and it was just a case of like teaching each other of how to get to these kind of upper areas and just causing mass destruction by just lifting vehicles up and piling them on top of each other and causing explosions and all kinds. But absolutely incredible game. So I'm you know, having kittens about what, you know, they're potentially going to do with the new kind of current gen or Xbox One version when that comes out. Some other stuff which people have probably expected at some point, but Red Dead Redemption, absolutely incredible experience for me. I know
it's
some
a
people
wonderful
think,
game.
Some people think it kind of went on too long. I wanted it to just continue forever. I wanted it to live in parallel alongside my normal life. And I would have been like John Marston and a cowboy in that side of it. And then I would have been like an app developer and game designer in real life.
Yeah, it was good, and the ending was good, but what was up with that cattle herding? Come on.
For all these kind of sandbox games have really like ropey parts to them, don't they? The odd, like,
yeah, they do. Yeah, they do.
But great game.
I loved it when you crossed into Mexico and the music changed.
Oh, yeah.
I loved it when you cross the border and they just flip it into mariachi band-esque music. It was a really clever game. I adored it. Yeah, it was a great soundtrack, and it had Jose Gonzalez was on the soundtrack, and Eddie Weber from Pearl Jam and stuff did a song in it. It's a really good game. I loved it.
Yeah, some quality game. It's another GTA, but I don't know whether it should have gone into the retro pile, really. But it was Vice City, and I think it was purely just because you could just spin around to kind of Broken Wings and classic tunes like that while doing drive-bys on people, which is not something I like to do in real life, obviously. But you know, we can all escape into kind of Miami Vice time and things like that. The other things for me are kind of moving over to PC gaming. So I'm quite a big console and PC gamer. So I kind of like my sim racing games on PC. So Project Cars, iRacing and things like that. But the kind of current games which I love, and these are probably games which not a lot of people have played, but it was Gone Home, which is really kind of, you know, indie-based first-person game, which was, if you just literally kind of go into it without knowing anything about it, you're just absolutely kind of on edge and wanting to see how the story unfolds and things like that. So if people haven't played it, just go and play it. It's just absolutely amazing and deservedly of people playing it and experiencing the story. And then the other one along a similar lines was the Vanishing of Ethan Carter, which again is probably one of the most, you know, gorgeous looking games I've ever seen. If your PC can run it, okay. But again,
I played it on PS4.
Okay, yeah, and PS4, yeah.
Loved it. I thought it was absolutely amazing. I love the way it tells the story. Obviously, I can't give away major spoilers on it, can we?
No.
But I just love the way the story unfolds and the exploration and how each event unfolds in its own unique way.
And the spin-offs as well, when you start kind of exploring areas and you come across real kind of unknowns and question marks, and then it takes you off to work out, you know, what all that's about. It's an absolutely incredible game, you know, PC, PS4, you know, whatever it is. If people haven't played that, they need to play it. It looks gorgeous, and the story and everything is just superb. So there's a chunk there, but we could probably talk about absolutely hundreds of games, the amount that we play and things like that. So I think we're moving into our last 5 minutes, basically, of this pod. If we keep it to our hour-long time scale. But so basically, the last couple of things are, so what are you guys currently playing at the moment, and what are you most looking forward to? Mark, or Webby, however you like to be called.
Yeah, just call me Webby. It's cool. Okay, very quickly then. Currently playing Forza Horizon 2, Forza 6, the new Metal Gear Solid, which is well good. And playing the Rainbow Six beta, which I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about or not. I think it's an open beta, so I'm just going to say.
I think I've just got my code, so open beta, I think, is today or tomorrow or something. Yeah. So
I'll jump on. So that's pretty cool. And obviously Final Fantasy 14 on the PS4. Oh, and a little bit of Castle Crashes on the Xbox One as well. Great, okay, nice. Fun. Love that game.
Brilliant game.
That's classic.
That's all I'm playing. I just want to say that all those games are really good.
And you, Rory?
Still playing the latest Batman game, which is good. It's not quite as good as I hoped it would be, but it plays pretty well and looks gorgeous, to be fair. I've ordered the Metal Gear game, which I'm desperately looking forward to playing because I'm hoping it's as good as it looks, and reviews. It's better, absolutely,
it's
better,
is it? It's yeah, so they, good. I think
it's
so
been a little
long,
bit of a
such a long I game. I mean, I got the game and I had 2 weeks off work.
Yeah,
I played it solid for those 2 weeks. I still haven't finished it. I've awesome. Put about 60 hours into it, and I'm on main mission. I've just done mission 20 today, and I think there's over 60 odd main missions.
Wow.
But I just find myself, because there's 167 or 57 side missions to do. So I just find myself doing
that's
those.
Insane. That's
so
huge.
Fun. Yeah, they're brilliant. It's such a good
huge.
Game.
Have you come across the PT Easter egg? Sorry, Rory. The PT Easter egg, apparently. I don't know where it is, but if you find a tent somewhere, there's like a radio in there and it's got that PT radio message that plays about.
Oh, no, I haven't come across that. Apparently,
get killed or something like that. So.
No, I haven't come across, but apparently Hideo Kojima is in it as a character as well, as a hostage.
Really?
Oh, awesome.
Yes, nice. That's pretty cool.
Excellent.
But no, it's such a great game. It's so massive. There's so much to do and explore.
I'm glad they've got it right, because it's going to be the last one, isn't it, by all accounts? And it's been such a great series. I grew up on especially the first three Metal Gear games. They're just,
the thing that I find a bit odd about it is it came out in the news a couple of weeks ago about the ending cutscene that they cut out of the game, and they packaged it with the special edition. So the only way to see the true ending of the game is now to go onto YouTube and watch it, which I think is really weird.
Yeah, it's a bit weird, especially if you put all that time into the amount of gameplay. Anything else that you're playing, Rory? Or?
No, man, not particularly. I'm sticking to being a one or two game man at the moment. So
okay, no problem. I'm not playing anything truly spectacular at the moment. I mean, I'm spending some time on Until Dawn because I'm a bit of a horror movie fan and things like that. So I'm just kind of experiencing that. I know some of the guys over at Supermassive. So just want to see what they've done. I'm probably about 25 minutes in, and I'm kind of enjoying it already. The tension and the kind of strange little incidents where you cut back and have a conversation with a psychiatrist or whatever it is. So it's just...
I'll tell you what, the good thing about Until Dawn is it'll get people who aren't into games watching you play. I got it. My missus' family was over from New Zealand, and I just picked up and I was like, look, I really want to play this game. And they were like, yeah, just crack on. And I'll tell you what, after 20 minutes, they were all engrossed in the game and they wouldn't let me play it without them in the room because they wanted to know what happened next. Brilliant.
I'd heard that it's kind of like that with a lot of people, just lots of people wanting to kind of watch someone play, but you get those individuals who are not great at games or on edge playing kind of scary based games, so they're just watching other people play it so they can experience it. But as I say, 20-25 minutes in, I'm really enjoying it, so I'm gonna kind of pick that up over the weekend. The other thing I'm playing really, so I'm kind of finishing off The Witcher 3. So amazing game, as we spoke about before, but I've just not had the time to really kind of plow into it. So kind of picking that up.
And the thing about that game is you can get, there's quite a lot of different endings depending on the actions you choose throughout the game. And I'm just going to throw that I had the worst possible ending ever.
Okay.
Because I was an arsehole throughout the whole game.
Okay.
Just shagged everything that moved.
Well, I think I'm probably a good, good few days, like a couple of weeks, a week or something into it. So, and I've kind of been relatively okay. So I'll maintain that path then, so I don't end up with a shit ending like you have. So, and I'm looking to pick up kind of Metal Gear Solid. I want to pick up, Forza 6 and things like that. Obviously big into me racing games. So that's kind of me at that point. So on to our final bit then. What are we most looking forward to? I'll just jump in there straight away and say The Division for me. I'm kind of hoping that it will rekindle the Graw days and of like team-based gameplay and battle and things like that. You know, it looks awesome. I'm hoping it's what Destiny should have been, maybe, because you've obviously got these pockets of single player and then player v player sections, but yeah, just looks at all.
Awesome. Dude, I wish you were on my podcast, because last year when I was talking about The Division, I'm really excited for this game because I love Tom Clancy games and I love that teamwork. And everyone else was like, "Looks shit, looks well shit." No, were you looking? I don't know. It looks so
it looks
good.
Great.
I can't wait for it. And that's the only reason. I mean, this year's Eurogamer Expo is the first year I've not been, and I'm a little bit annoyed at myself now, because the Division is playable there and I really want to see what it's like.
Yeah, I think it's going to be ace. I think the key thing is going to be having that, you know, a team of like real, you know, mates that you can trust, you know, so you can just like really kind of work together.
Yeah, it does look like it's got it right. I mean, you know, from all that, you know, I watched some of the clips of it. Was it E3 or one of the game shows? And it did look that kind of community gaming, which we said earlier, it's been a bit lost over the last, well, on this generation, really. Yeah, so consoles. So hopefully they'll get it right.
And the other thing is, I don't know if we'll watch that video. This team were at the end waiting to be extracted, and then one of them just turned around and killed all their teammates.
Oh yeah, just like
what an arsehole.
Yeah, it's amazing. So it's got some real, it's got some real kind of moments that could be awesome in it. And as I say, I'm hoping it kind of rekindles the old Graw days, or you know, that type of, you know, team based gameplay and stuff. But it looks awesome, and it's by one of my favourite devs, Massive, because they made, you know, World in Conflict, I think it was, which was one of my favourite kind of RTSs of all time. But obviously the brain kicking in and kicking out games that you know, we've played in the past. What are you guys looking forward to? Obviously, we can probably all say that we're all looking forward to The Division when that finally comes out. But
yeah, Ghost Recon.
Yeah.
And for me this year, Fallout.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Is that out this year? Because it suddenly came from nowhere, yeah.
November, isn't it? Or
November?
Yeah, I think it's out a week after Battlefront, which I'm looking forward to Battlefront as well, to be fair, see what they've done with that. But yeah, I think it's a week later. We've got a good selection of games coming out in the next year, certainly.
And I'm looking forward to Halo.
Yeah.
Just from a campaign perspective and playing it in co-op, just to see what they've done with the story, because it does look really interesting with those two.
I hope they've got it right. It does look like they'll get it right again, because it did. The series really dropped off after Halo 3, in my opinion. But
yeah, it's awesome kind of campaign and cooperative play in the Halo series. So
yeah,
that'd be awesome. Anything on your side, Rory? Or?
I said Mirror's Edge, which it's probably not till early next year. I know, what's the follow up to Shadow of the Colossus that they still haven't announced, or is that still some way off?
Yeah, I think it's
what's it called? This thing with the big dog. It looks all right. Yeah. They showed it at E3 actually, and at Gamescom.
Yeah. It's only because I adore Shadow of the Colossus, which I didn't talk about earlier.
And I'm trying to think. I can't believe
My brain's just melted.
I can't remember what it's called. It's kind of It looked a bit. It still looked early to me that he,
yeah, it did look early.
Slow screen.
I like that kind of genre. It's
the Last Guardian. Yeah. That's the one.
Okay, and that kind of genre. So any kind of things on, any kind of things on that kind of level is good for me. So
yeah, absolutely. All right, well, chaps, it's been an awesome first episode, and I think obviously we'll have more of these to come. Just as we wrap up, if you just want to spin over your kind of Twitter and gamer tags again, PSN tags, just for anyone to listen at the end. Mine is CJ Grinnell, CJGRANNELL. That's my Twitter name. And on Xbox Live and PSN, I am Hard Times UK. Also the same on Steam. So feel free to add. And obviously, we'll see you online. Webby, you're
up. Okay. Well, mine's really easy. You can find me on Twitter, Xbox Live, PlayStation Network and Steam, Webby317. Simple.
I need to make mine more simple. Rory?
Yeah, you've got two or three of you there. That's way too complicated. mine are both PapaG84. So on both Twitter and that is my PS tag. So.
Brilliant. Okay, well, thanks a lot for your time, guys. And, the birth of 1UP, and you guys are always welcome back on and will be back on
Thank you, sir.
Future episode. So, we hope everyone's enjoyed it, and stay tuned to AI Channel and also 1UP for more gaming fun in the future. Cheers.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.